Hey everybody, Chris Fafalius here. If you enjoy One Hit Thunder, which I'm assuming you do considering you're listening to it right now, I want to tell you about another great music podcast on the Evergreen Podcast Network. It's called Riffs on Riffs. On this season of Riffs on Riffs, hosts Toby Braswell and Joe Watson are breaking down one iconic pop song each week. Everything from Taylor Swift's Cruel Summer to Journey's Don't Stop Believin' to Naughty by Nature's OPP. Each week, they crack open the song, trace its history, decode those cryptic lyrics, and unearth the hidden gems in its musical DNA. Not only do they dive into the song's history, lyrics, and impact, they also go down some fun and oftentimes hilarious rabbit holes. So yeah, if you're a fan of One Hit Thunder, I think you'll also enjoy Riffs on Riffs. So go hit that subscribe button on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods.
This episode is brought to you by Saks.com. At Saks.com, it's easy to find your new vibe. Dive into the Western trend with gold cowboy boots from Staud, or go full 90s throwback with platforms from Prada. You can shop for everything on your agenda, whether it's a breezy Zimmermann dress for a garden party or a bright Chloe blazer for brunch. Find inspiration for your new vibe every day at Saks.com.
Join us this week as we welcome back comedian and reality show star John Franklin to explore the irresistible Come On Eileen by Dexy's Midnight Runners. While you may only remember them for their one U.S. hit and for dressing in overalls, Dexy's Midnight Runners are far more than just a novelty act. Led by the visionary Kevin Rowland, the band is a fully fledged concept group, revered by critics and cherished by fans worldwide. Tune in to discover the depth and brilliance behind this iconic band and why their repertoire extends far beyond their most famous hit.
One hit is all you need to make the money guarantee. And you can live off royalties forever.
And it makes me wonder, is it just a wonder, or is it one hit thunder?
All right, so John, welcome back. You're here today to talk with us about a song and a band. I cannot believe we are like 200 some episodes into this podcast and have not covered this. Some people might think this would be one of the first 10 episodes we do, but here we are. Special little disclaimer to people in the UK. Yes, we know that Dexy's Midnight Runners are not a one-hit wonder in the UK. In fact, they had two number one hits, Gino and Come On Eileen in the UK, but we are a US-based show. So to us, Dexy's Midnight Runners are a one-hit wonder, as I'm sure you guys would agree.
Well, this is also a first because this is the first time we're covering the song for a second time. Somehow we did the Save Ferris one-hit thunder episode before we did the Dexy's Midnight Runners one. And I think our struggle with the Save Ferris episode was that there really wasn't much to say about the band Save Ferris, but there is so much to say about Dexy's Midnight Runner.
Is there?
John, did you do any research on this, or are we about to educate you?
We're gonna learn together. This is really what it is.
This is, I watched a little mini documentary on YouTube that was titled something like The Chaotic History of Dexy's Midnight Runners, and boy oh boy, trying to even keep track of this one is pretty crazy. But I will say Kevin Rowland is the center of the universe when it comes to Dexy's Midnight Runners.
Wait, I'm looking at their Wikipedia page right now. What did the entire UK play in this band,
dude,
at some point?
49 past members. I counted
49 past members, and 13, I think 13 to 14 of them left the band before Come On Eileen. Mm-hmm. Like the rotate. So basically, John, what you have to understand right out the gate with this, and this will probably explain a lot about this band too, to a certain extent. Like you, like Chris just said, Kevin Roland is the name you need to know with Dexys Midnight Runners. And by all accounts, he is the entire creative force of this band, and he is a bit of a control freak. True. And that can be one of two things. And that can either just be a complete narcissist, or it could be an actual genius at work. And there are a lot of people, and I won't say for sure, but let's just say that maybe I'm one of those people who leans towards the genius side. Dexys Midnight Runner put out 3 albums during their first run as a band, broke up for roughly 15 years, and then came back and have put out 3 more records. Their most recent record came out last year. Like, they are still an active recording band, and there is not a single record in their catalog that is not a critically well-received album. And a large portion of that is because I think Kevin Roland has exactly what you want in a band leader, which is that he has a very clear vision of what what he is trying to craft with these albums, and that can be detrimental as we get deeper into this.
Well, but let me ask John a question. Let me ask John a question.
Yeah, go ahead.
When you think about Dexys Midnight Runners, does a something visual come to mind?
I was just about to go here. Yeah.
My cousin Chris, who I think I believe has also been on the show.
Oh yeah.
Yes.
He has showed me, and this wasn't in preparation for this. This is like years ago, I think, a live version of this song that is so bad on YouTube. It is so bad. And it's Dexys Midnight Runners. And I know what they look like because of that. Wouldn't be able to tell you otherwise. But when I think like visually, when I think of this song, I think of Tommy Boy.
Okay, but there's not like a specific pair of clothing that you associate with the band fashion-wise.
No, am I supposed to be? Do they all wear like high-waisted pants or something?
So kind of. So when this video blew up, they went for a look of like they were a band of traveling gypsies was the way that he described it.
Oh my God.
So it was like country mixed with that. So it was like overalls and bandanas. And
oh, I'm looking at it right now. This is awesome.
But that was not their original look the first time around.
What do you mean?
So with each album, Kevin had a different style for the entire band to fit the concept of every album that they put out.
Oh, I'm looking at it. Wow.
Yeah, like stark contrast between first album in the late 70s and Come On Eileen, right? Are you looking at the one now where they're in like jackets and leather coats with wool caps and they kind of just all look like they're Robert De Niro from Mean Streets?
I see that one, but I also see it looks like Don't Stand Me Down.
Yep. Totally different band as well.
And,
right.
And they look like a corporate American family.
That's my favorite Dexys look. That was the album. That was the album after Come On Eileen. But,
What?
Yeah. Well, we'll get into that. That may be a very big reason why there was not a follow-up hit from this band.
But people loved that album.
People love that album, but we'll get there. We have to start at the beginning of this. So the start of this band was two guys, Kevin Archer and Kevin Roland, who were in a punk band called the Killjoys in the 70s. Now, in the UK, specifically in Birmingham, England, there was this huge movement called the Northern Soul movement.
Oh, yeah.
Are you familiar with this at all?
Me, personally?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, you don't have to be.
You don't have to be. I'm just trying.
We're going to assume that John was not in England in the late 70s. Can we assume?
I see what it is, though. I'm like reading along as you're doing this. So I know what. Yeah, I see what it is. I don't know what it is.
So, Chris, I think that we talked about Northern Soul with AJ Santini when he came on to talk about But It's All Right. And basically, Northern Soul was in Birmingham, England. There was this huge movement of mostly, it seemed, punk rock teens who just like to take speed and dance their asses off to obscure 60s American soul records, and not the famous ones, the deep cuts that barely charted in the States. They ate that shit up. In fact, speed was so prevalent that's where this band name literally comes from.
Yeah, I'm literally looking at this right now.
So it was basically like their band name was like, "We really like speed." Which is funny because Kevin Rowland asked all the bands to abstain from drinking or doing any drugs before they would go on stage.
Well, also, I would like to say, I'm not pushing drugs here. Don't do drugs. But if you're going to do drugs, if you're going to use amphetamines for the sake of dancing all night to old soul records, I think that's a pretty cool reason to do it.
That's not a bad one.
Yeah.
I agree with that.
Well, Kevin being crazy band leader here, crazy, I think, in a good way, he insisted that anyone that played in his band, you approach this like a full-time job. We are practicing from 9 to 5 every day. So if you're not down with that, get out. You're out. And
I'm into that.
Yeah. I mean, if you're going to take it seriously and make this your career, I think that's a pretty awesome approach.
And yeah. Especially with if you watch the performances from this era, I mean, they have like 12 people on that stage playing all types of different instruments. And that's, you can't do that well if you're practicing for like 2 hours a week. You know what I mean? Like, you need to really hammer out what every horn player is doing, what like the rhythm section is doing, and like really get that down to a fine art. And they kind of, that first album's kind of interesting because it is very Northern Soul inspired, but at the time they were also touring with the Specials, and it does feel like it has a little bit of that like Specials madness, walking that line of ska versus new wave music of like the early 80s a little bit, with how heavy the horns are in there.
Mm-hmm.
There's a great quote from Roland in 1980. So before Come On Eileen, this was when they were blowing up with their first single, Gino, which we'll talk about. But he said, "We didn't want to be part of anybody's movement. We want it to become our own movement. Image became extremely important in our group. We want it to be a group that looked like something, a formed group, a project, not just random people on a stage."
That's exactly what they looked like. they looked exactly like random people on a stage. If you saw them, 4 years apart, you saw an entire, you were probably so fucking confused.
Yeah.
Like, if you weren't prepared for it, like, you just showed up and you were like, "Right, last time I saw them, they looked like a bunch of vagabonds, and now they look like they learned how to use like TI-83 calculators." Look, yeah. Ridiculous.
Yeah, the dude had a vision with each album, not beyond just the music. The music especially. Now, John, you said you saw a performance of them where they were bad. I'm surprised.
There's a flute. There's a flute in there. Like on the Wikipedia page, I love it. Like, there's like, when you look under the timeline of the band members, like, they have different colors for different instruments, and like one of them is just like, it says flute, and you're like, I hope that was one person. Like you know,
how many
they went through multiple flute players throughout their run.
Flautists? Yeah, did it take to get Dexy's Midnight Runners really running?
Yeah,
is what I want to know.
Yeah, it's a lot. Yeah.
All right, so they have a minor hit out the gate with this song, Dance Dance, their first ever single. They get signed. Their second single, Gino, hits number one in the UK before the album's even close to completion. And it's literally a song in tribute to Gino Washington and the Ram Jam Band, which was another one of those obscure, no one's ever heard of them, 60 soul singers that was huge in this Northern soul style. But it's obviously the second album, called To La Ray, that comes out. And it ends with this song, Come On Eileen, this massive hit that became number one in the UK, and it became the number one song in the United States. Let's dive into this factoid, because this is so cool. It peaks at number one on April 23rd, 1983. And if there's one thing that Dexy's Midnight Runner can take credit for, it is for 1 week, they kept Michael Jackson from having back-to-back number one hits.
Yeah.
Because the week before this, the number one song in America was Billie Jean. And the week after this, the number one song in America was Beat It. But he was held back by the power of the Dexys
Yeah.
Unbelievable is this top 10 during the week that this peaked. Chris, I feel like you also normally check into this stuff. I hope you didn't, because I would love to get both of your reactions to this stacked list. Okay. At number 10, we had a song that we've covered on this podcast, Thomas Dolby's She Blinded Me with Science.
Okay.
Great song. Love great that song.
Number 9, David Bowie, Let's Dance.
Right.
Okay.
Number 8, Journey Separate Ways.
Ooh.
Wow.
Number 7, probably the deepest cut on this entire top 10 list, Hall & Oates, One on One.
Oh, I love that song.
Very solid song, but yeah, that is not for the ones that you've said it against.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know. Number 6, After the Fire, Der Karmazar, which for those of you who don't know, it's the Don't Turn Around. Uh-oh.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now this top 5. Number 5, Michael Jackson's Billie Jean, making its way down the chart. Yep. Number 4, the Greg Kinn band Jeopardy.
Mm.
Great song. Number 3, Styx, Dr. Roboto. Oh. Or yeah, Mr. Roboto. Dr. Roboto is from Sonic the Hedgehog.
That's my father.
And Michael Jackson beat it at number 2. And sitting at the top of the pile, Dixie's Midnight Runners, Come On Eileen.
Those mid-80s are awesome for music. Matt, you skipped over, though, something I think is pretty important. From Gino, which with this hit, this number one hit in the UK, between the time that came out and they recorded another album and this becomes a hit, he fired and or members quit the entire band. And this was a big band.
Yeah, it was just him and the trombone player were the only people left by the time he formed a brand new band.
The ever important trombone player.
Well, he stuck around. The trombone player stuck around.
Yeah, because he was like, it's not getting better than this.
Yeah. Well, those two, Kevin and the trombone, what was his name?
It was Big Jim Peterson.
He
co-wrote this.
Those two were known as what? The Celtic Brothers or something like that? They were.
Yeah, and there's even a song. That's what it is. There's a song on the album even called like the Celtic Brothers Jig or something like that.
Yeah, so those two went on and just things never stopped changing. So for this era of Dexys that we all know and love because of this song, they got some string and they made everybody who joined the band to play like violin or let me see who played what in this era, because he made them all change their name to sound like more Irish or Scottish.
Well, I know that the violin player, he changed her name to Helen O'Hara.
Yeah, that's not her name. But yes, they were all made to change their names to sound, to fit in with that look of that era of the band. And it became a huge song. Kevin Rowland really hated the press. So after Gino became a hit, he put an embargo on any of his band members or him talking to the press ever, because what they were writing about them was that they were effectively that they were inauthentic, that they were just imitating the 60s music, but it wasn't coming through as real or authentic, which I tend to disagree with. I think it sounds pretty good and pretty cool to me. Maybe it's because I'm 40 years removed from it now, so it all sounds like classic music to me. But that was the complaint at the time, which I could see. I don't remember people saying this too much about Amy Winehouse, because she had a throwback sound, but I think she did a good job of replicating it. But I have heard complaints about people that try to throw it back, but it doesn't sound authentic. It just sounds too modern for what bands are doing.
You know who I think that, so it didn't happen to Amy Winehouse, but it definitely, I think, happened to like Meghan Trainor.
Oh,
right.
Yeah.
Like Meghan Trainor had more of like a 60s throwback.
Very good.
Yeah.
Well, that's also it too, but that goes hand in hand with it. I think she was inauthentic.
Yeah. She was trying to sound doo-wop-ish or whatever she was trying to sound, but it was too modern pop. But hey, she had a huge hit from it, so I guess it works for her.
Well, in the UK, they had another minor hit after Come On Eileen, which I love. They covered Van Morrison's song, Jackie Wilson Said, I'm in Heaven When You Smile.
Song.
It's a great song, and they do an equally good version of it. Like the style the transition of sound makes total sense with them covering this particular song. Mm. And yeah, that is one of, I would say that's in like the top 10 Van Morrison songs for me. That is a great, great song. Now, let me ask you this, John. What do you think the song Come On Eileen is about?
Ooh, well.
Because there's technically two answers to this question.
Right. So when a man and a woman love each other very much.
I knew you were going for this.
No. I won't go there.
You were going blue.
Yeah. I was going, get me canceled before I even started. I mean, what? He's at a bar. He sees a girl that's really beautiful. She's in that dress. He wants to take her home. His thoughts verge on dirty. I'm one of the rare people who might know all the words to Come On Eileen straightforward.
Like, I think I'm right there with you, but.
I think what? He sees a girl across the bar, wants to take her home type of a situation. Very simple, but.
So there's two answers to this. So one answer is that Kevin Rowland said that there's no actual Eileen, but that she's a composite to make a point about his growing up as a Catholic schoolboy and the sexual repression that he experienced as a teenager because he was told that sex is dirty. Hence, wow. Like a lyric like verges on dirty. Right. But since you say you think you know all the words to it, I want you to think of it through this lens. All right. It, at the time, very often was referred to as England's version of Born to Run. That it's about two people trying to escape the shittiness of the world that they live in, specifically with that second verse where it says, these people around here wear beaten down eyes and sunken smoke dried face and are resigned to what their fate is, but not us. We're too young and clever. So it's like that idea of like, we're going to pack up and we're going to run away. Yeah, like, come on, Eileen, we're going to get the fuck out of this shit.
That makes sense. I mean, now to be, and look, I'm not trying to give myself an out here, but had I given you the answer that I thought it was about his Catholic upbringing and given you all that information, you would have been like, all right, well, that's cheating. Like,
yeah, you Googled.
You would not have believed me. So I'm pretty,
I set you up to fail. Yeah.
And that's totally fine. And that is so okay. Like, that is so okay. But that's interesting because, like, I grew up Catholic too.
Yeah.
Which, like, I think it's like an interesting point because I make this joke on stage because, like, Catholicism and growing up that way is interesting because there's a lot of, like, tongue in cheek, you don't talk about certain things. Right? Like, I never had to talk with my parents at all, like, ever.
Yeah.
But
probably lucky.
Whenever.
Well, it is awkward.
the only time that my dad ever talked to me about sex was the day before I left for college. He came into my bedroom in my parents' house and threw Steely Dan's Greatest Hits on vinyl and a 300 pack box of Durex brand condoms on my bed and just went, I did my job and left the room. So and you could say I didn't get the best, but my overall point being with the Catholicism thing was like, we don't talk about anything, but then if you're married, all you could talk about at family events is like, we're trying to get pregnant.
Yeah.
Which I think is like super uncomfortable because it's like, it's like, oh great, like Cousin Joanne's getting raw dogged this week. Like,
dude, you know, like, that's so funny you say that. I think about that all the time. People say we're trying to get pregnant. So yes, I am,
like, it's like,
yeah,
what are we talking about?
Yes.
And like, so I get where he's coming from, where he's like, I wasn't even allowed to talk about finding a woman attractive, so I'm gonna write a song about how much I find this, like, essentially fictionalized version of what I like, the idea of being attracted to a woman into a hit song, I think is pretty interesting.
Right.
Yeah. And Chris, we actually very recently discussed an element of this song on the podcast because we covered the beloved hit, Are You Jimmy Ray? Where one of the questions is, are you Johnny Ray?
Wow.
And we talked about how the opening line of this song is poor old Johnny Ray sounded sad upon the radio. And we were talking about how all of his hit songs were songs like Crying and Crying on the Moon. And like a lot of his songs are really sad. I did read someone breaking down that lyric and they were saying like that song, that part almost feels like saying like poor old Johnny Ray sounded sad upon the radio. He moved a million hearts in mono. Our mothers used to sing along and who could blame them? And then we can sing just like our fathers, like that. It's almost saying like this throwback to these were the good old days of music and like the modern music isn't good. And him kind of saying like, we'll have our songs that we can sing the same way that our fathers sang those old Johnny Ray songs.
That's interesting.
Again, I am a very pro Dexys Midnight Runner person. I think that Kevin Rowland is a very interesting and creative songwriter. I think that he comes up with great, like, the melodies to this are really funny and interesting, but there's a memory that I have, and if I can find this clip to put into the episode, I will, but I don't know how easy it will be to find. When Garth Brooks hosted SNL, that was when Jim Brewer was doing the Goat Boy Remember the 80s sketch. And there is a bit that I think of all the time where he's like, and coming up next, the guy from Dexy's Midnight Runner. And like, Garth Brooks comes out and he sits down. And he goes, I don't want to be a super fan or anything, but could you please sing the song? And he's like, yeah, sure. And he goes, poor old Johnny Ray, sad, it's sad. He goes, no, sing the Eileen song. And he's like, that is the Eileen song. He goes, funny, I don't remember any of that in the song. Because this song is the chorus and the bridge. Well, like, that is what people remember.
This episode is brought to you by Saks.com. At Saks.com, it's easy to find your new vibe. Dive into the Western trend with gold cowboy boots from Staud, or go full 90s throwback with platforms from Prada. You can shop for everything on your agenda, whether it's a breezy Zimmermann dress for a garden party or a bright Chloe blazer for brunch. Find inspiration for your new vibe every day at Saks.com.
Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the must not take yourself too seriously and 6-1 since that matters. And what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble, with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
Hey, one-hit thunders, thunderheads, thunderbuns. All right, I'll just go with one-hit thunder listeners. This is Chris DeMakes, guitarist and vocalist for Less Than Jake, and host of Chris DeMakes a Podcast, a songwriting podcast where every week I'm joined by an amazing guest to break down the writing, recording, and release of one iconic song that they have written. In our giant evergreen back catalog of episodes, we've had rock legends such as Dee Snider and Huey Lewis, punk rock favorites such as Mark Hoppus, Fat Mike, and Brett Gurewitz, up-and-coming artists of today such as Liz Stokes of The Beths and Genesis Owusu, and even some of the artists that have been featured on One Hit Thunder. The show is even produced by One Hit Thunder host Chris Fafalius. What more could you possibly ask for? Chris DeMakes a Podcast is available for free on all the places you listen to podcasts, and new episodes come out every Monday. I guarantee you'll like it, or we'll give you your money back.
I saw a lot of talk about Kevin Rowland's delivery as well, that he like really spent a lot of time, lyrics were really important to him, and then the producer would be like, why do you care so much about all these lyrics when no one can I guess you guys understand it, but the way he delivers it is a little mush mouth. And also, I saw a comparison, not in this song, other songs where he gets even more mush mouthy. And they compared it to, do you guys know that song by Chairman of the Board? Give me just a little more
little
time.
More time. Yeah. Our love will surely grow. Yeah. Great. Another great
Such
song.
Such a great song. But that singer, he does these things. You pay attention to the verses where he like really messes with the words. And he also does this thing, which not in this song, in a different song, but Kevin Rowland rips off completely where he goes, brrr.
Yeah, that's one of the best parts of that song.
It's awesome. I want to do that in a song at some point. It's so fun to do.
Chris, you know who else does that in a song?
Who?
It's Saint Clown Posse does that in fucking...
What song?
House of Horrors.
Okay.
This is when I get crazy. Let me show you something. You know what that means? It don't mean nothing. But it scares you because people don't be doing that shit. But me, bitch, I'm all about it.
Nice. I'm sure they did it. I'm sure they were big Chairman of the Board fans.
They drew massive inspiration. Yeah. One of my favorite like things that I think about when I hear that song, the Chairman of the Board song, and I've always thought about this since like my dad had played this for me, the song as a kid. Like every time he says baby, it sounds like somebody is squeezing him at the waist.
Yeah.
And like lifting him into the microphone. It's like, baby.
Yep.
Please, baby. It's just like so like loud. It's crazy. It's awesome. It's such a good song, though.
It's awesome. His delivery is very unique. And I think Kevin Rowland openly admits they did a side by side in a video that I watched where it's like, oh yeah, he's doing this. And look, I kind of think this, I mean, I don't like to throw the G word around a lot. The genius thing, like, I don't know. This guy could just be really good. I think that maybe he got in his own way a little bit. I think you got to keep a band together. You can't, if you want to be a band, you kind of got to keep a band together. He couldn't seem to keep that. Maybe he just didn't have people that were dedicated enough around him, or maybe he was just laying the hammer down too hard on these people. I don't know which is which. Well, it could be a little of column A and a little of column B. But this band, talent-wise, and his songwriting ability, they could have been even more of a household name. They could have had more hits in the States, I think.
Well, let's talk about Don't Stand Me Down.
Yeah,
because that, I think, is the career ender for this band. And mostly because, again, I think Kevin Rowland got in his own way. So if you look at the track list for this album,
this is the next album.
This is the album. Yeah, the album after
They're
Come On Eileen.
Shoots.
Yes.
It took 3 years to put this album out. It is seven tracks long. The shortest tracks, there's two tracks that are 3 minutes. The rest are 6 minutes, 7 minutes, 8 minutes, and a 13-minute song in the middle of the album.
Jesus.
And at the time that this came out, Kevin Rowland refused to release anything as a single because in his mind, and he cited Led Zeppelin as a group that he was inspired by, when you put out a concept album, you can't take any of these songs out of the story. People just have to buy the album and listen to it in full. Right. And like to release a single would somehow diminish the enjoyability of it. So this album tanks hard and the band finally breaks up. Now this album is in multiple like greatest albums of all time lists. I know it's on like the 1001 albums to listen to before you die. It's a beloved release now, but at the time it was very much rejected as being far too much of a departure from what their first two albums were. And for 15 years, Kevin Rowland tried to make it as a solo artist and struggled to reunite the band. Finally, in 2003, they officially reformed, but then they didn't put out a record until 2012. Now they've released a couple CDs since or albums since then, but like it is a long, interesting, storied career for this band.
We just glossed over so many things. The Kevin Rowland getting in his own way thing. Let me give you another example of that. At the height of their U.S. popularity, they got an opening slot on the David Bowie tour. And then Kevin Rowland came out, I think, at one of the first shows, maybe the first show, played Come On Eileen first, and then told the crowd to fuck off.
Which, unbelievable.
Like, I guess because that's what people were, that was all that people cared about with them. Something along those lines. Also, you know, all these like past members of the band started another band without him, like after the first break off, before Come On Eileen, after Gino. And Kevin Rowland is accused for Come On Eileen of ripping off one of that band's songs. And you could go watch YouTubes about or whatever. There's some side-by-sides out there where I haven't seen anything about Kevin Rowland speaking on it, but his trombonist guy who came with him, Peterson,
Big Jim Peterson,
Big Jim,
yeah,
Big Jim. He said, "I don't know anything about that." He said, "I never heard their song, and I am a co-writer on that song, and I'm telling you, I did not rip that song off." So it could just be that they were influenced by the same things or whatever. So
there was, and Chris, maybe you remember this or wrote this down, but there was also a quote from Kevin where he essentially basically said that he reformed Dexy's Midnight Runner as soon as all those guys left to form their own band because he just felt like, fuck you, how dare you walk away from
spite.
Me.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was driven by spite to keep the band going and become bigger than them.
I don't know if you guys have experienced it in your lives or professional careers or anything at all. Spite, it's pretty motivating, I gotta say.
Sure.
It certainly worked for Kevin.
I always think when I hear these stories about people like this, what always is interesting to me is like how different the time, like the interests of music are in different countries at different times. Because you're looking at this band as a whole as a massive success, you would say, regardless of all the turmoil and different crap that they went through. Like, they have a lot of really good success in the UK, and they have one major hit in the US, right?
Yeah.
And like, you got to think that a good portion of that is like they hit on those heartstrings of like the American public and the general public that might like something like Come On Eileen, but then America doesn't give like a rat's ass stylistically about what they do. But back home, they're like, this isn't a one hit wonder. This is just a really good band.
Right.
It's like how I think a lot of if you're not very well versed in like rock and roll music in general, if you just know them for the one song, I think a lot of American people think Thin Lizzy is a one hit wonder.
Yeah.
But Thin Lizzy is a fucking incredible band and they have a lot of incredible songs.
Sure.
Yeah.
But if you're not a rock and roll head, you think that they're a one hit wonder. I think you might be able to park them under this category a little bit.
I think we see that a lot just in general with like, you know, like I've had someone ask me before, like, when is One Hit Thunder going to do an episode on Blur? And like, to me, that has never in a million years passed my mind.
Never crossed your mind.
Yeah. Like now, theoretically, I did end up looking into it and I'm like, theoretically, they're kind of like a U.S. no hit wonder if you're going on Billboard standing, because it wasn't like song two, like tore it up the Hot 100 or whatever.
Right.
You know what I mean? But it's a sports arena anthem. But anybody who's even a little bit of a music nerd knows a bunch of songs by Blur, right? Because they're this like insanely popular band that literally outsold Oasis in the UK at one point at like the peak of the second wave of Britpop. Like it's very weird walking that line. Chris, I don't know if you came up with a game for us today. Did you?
I did. I always have a game.
Okay, well then let me do this real quick and then we'll do the game real fast. The power of Come On Eileen, though, I did pull up a few stats. In the year 2000, Channel 4, which I believe is the UK. A
very popular UK station, yeah.
Yep, they placed this song at 38 of the 100 greatest number one singles of all time. VH1 placed it as the number three greatest one-hit wonder of all time. And 18 on the greatest songs of the 80s. But number one on the greatest 80s one hit wonders list. So like this song has a lot of power. Like I said, I think a big part of it, the Come On Eileen chorus is catchy as hell. But for my money, it is that bridge. It is that come on Eileen Tallulah. Yeah. And that slow
tempo.
Build.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like that. That's the part that I think sealed the. We talk about this sometimes. There had to have been a point where they wrote that part and Kevin Rowland knew that he had just struck gold with that.
Yeah.
Like, because it's so catchy. You hear it once and you'll never, ever forget that part in the song.
Yeah.
And then, like, the fiddle right at the end of it, goes right into the core. Oh, it's, that's incredible.
It's, yeah. You know, we've talked a lot about the history and we've talked about Kevin Rowland and the chaos of the band, but the song, it's a beast of a song. It is very well done. It's exciting. You just have every part. You're looking forward to the next. Yeah. The bridge, the tempo increase during that part, kick it up into the last one. It's a party. This song is a party and it definitely defines the 80s. It's one of probably the 10 songs you would put. If you had to put like Take On Me and I don't know, Billie Jean and this and you know, a few others would all fit perfectly as the songs that everybody knows from the 80s. And
I think that even that top 10 that Matt pulled up is like a perfect like cross section of the 80s too, because like there's so many crazy influences in the 80s, like the pop, like that, you know, like you had like George Michael had just come around with Wham, but then you also have like, you know, like Tainted Love and Soft Cell like existed in the 80s. It's all like there was so much different stuff going on.
There was a lot of different stuff going on. But again, and I think I have to credit Todd in the Shadows for this particular point, but a point all the same, there really wasn't other bands on the radio that sounded like Dexy's Midnight Runner, even in the eclecticness of the 80s. Like you're talking about a band at the peak of synthesizers in music that had not a synthesizer to be found.
They had a flute and a trombone.
like it really was like a going back to the basics of what music was in that 60s soul style, and just like finding that way to hone like a little bit of ska, a little bit of Celtic music, a little bit of soul music, a little bit of new wave music, a little bit of rock, and like really craft it their own unique sound that no one else, including Michael Jackson, could top for that moment, because it sounded like nothing else.
That's right. That's an awesome way to approach music. Man, I had to look at this. You keep, I was like, am I wrong? You keep making them singular, Dexy's Midnight Runner. Yeah. But that aside, you always mispronounce all the band names. It doesn't matter.
That's what I'm known for. That's my calling card.
It is Dexy's Midnight Runners, but I always assumed it was Dexy's like apostrophe S. Like, it's,
is it not?
It's not.
No.
It's Dexy's no apostrophe. Like,
oh, because of the drug.
Yeah.
Like, it's not a possessive.
Yeah, it's not ownership. Oh, yeah.
It feels like it's missing a like Dexy's R4 Midnight Runners or something. Like, I don't know. It's Dexy's Midnight Runners, no apostrophe. We'll keep that in mind when we put this up, Matt.
Yes.
No apostrophe. But speaking of all this great music of the time and how eclectic it was, I have a quick game for you guys. I got five questions. You guys, if you know the answer, you can ring in, but you got to ring in by going,
oh, okay. Geez.
You got to do the chairman of the board ring in.
I got to wet the whistle. Hold on.
Or your best version of that.
Mine won't be good, but I'll try.
You eliminated one of my questions because one of them was what song came after. We already talked that Beat It came on after. So you have five questions. So these are all 1983 related.
Oh, okay.
It's they're good.
Matt, you're gonna crush me.
Songs we all know.
Okay.
In January and February of 1983, Men at Work had the number one spot for four. No, not yet.
Okay, damn it.
I mean, yeah. Let me finish this one because it's not going where you think.
Yeah, okay.
In January and February of 1983, Men at Work had the number one spot for four out of the 5 weeks on the Hot 100 with Land Down Under.
Okay, got it.
What other song about a place hit number one for 1 week to break up their run? So Men at Work had Land Down Under was number one for 3 weeks. Then it wasn't for 1 week. Then it was again. What song about a place, also about a place, took the number one spot for 1 week?
No, there's no way this song went to number one. You know what? Fuck it. Why not?
Oh, good. I like that. I like that edit.
Thank you. I don't remember this being a number one hit when we covered it. It's not Murray Head's One Night in Bangkok.
No, but that was a pretty good guess based on a place. Yeah, that's a pretty good guess.
I'm gonna take a wild guess.
Go ahead.
Salisbury Hill by Peter Gabriel.
Also a good guess of a place.
Can I try one more time for no points?
Okay,
even
for
if
no
I get
points,
it right.
You can go ahead.
Was it Toto Africa?
It was.
Oh, no, we should have got that. You and I both went way too like outside the realm of popularity. Was Salisbury Hill a number one hit?
I don't know.
I don't know about that.
But Africa, for me, Africa feels later than 83. So that was kind of jumping to my mind.
Not even the best Toto song.
No, hold the line.
Yeah. Well, also,
I'm a Rosanna guy, but
both all those songs are awesome. But also, it's surprising to me that Africa wasn't number one more than 1 week.
Yeah, only 1 week. It didn't true. Like take that, it back after. Wow. Okay.
For a song that's had the staying power that it does. Okay. No points yet.
One could argue that has more staying power than Men at Work, Land Down Under. Honestly.
Oh yeah, it does. It does. Okay. You should get this one.
Okay.
After Beat It, this David Bowie song kept the number one spot for 1 week on May 21st, 1983. Go ahead.
Is it Let's Dance?
You got it.
It was on the top 10 that Matt named.
Yeah. Yeah.
Would not have gotten it if you didn't list the whole top 10.
All right. 1-0, John. Okay. You guys ready? For fans of 80s Joel, this Billy Joel song took the number one spot for 1 week on September 24th, 1983.
Okay.
Go ahead. You're bad at that.
I know. I'm trying to think. I think 83 would have still. Fuck. I'm going to say Don't Ask Me Why.
That is incorrect.
Damn it.
Well, okay. So my head is also on Glass Houses.
Yeah, Glass Houses is 81. There's no way it took him 3 years for the next album.
My thought was, and I'm going to.
Go ahead.
It opens that album. I'm gonna say You May Be Right.
Sorry, that is incorrect.
All right, can I throw another no point guess?
Yeah, go ahead.
Was it Uptown Girl?
Nope. You're closer though.
Is it
for the longest time?
Longest time.
No, you guys are so close.
Oh, hold on.
I'm trying to think what other songs are on that one.
It's on that album. It's on
it? Okay, so wait, hold on. I definitely know. Is it? It's not.
That's the money one.
It's not the French one. C'est à toi. It's one of the most awful Billy Joel songs ever.
It's on Glass Houses. Leave that alone.
That is on Glass Houses. Oh wait, yeah. What album are we looking for?
We're on the one that has Uptown Girl.
Is it Innocent Man? Is that album?
That's the name of the album. Yeah,
that's the name of the album.
I'm almost positive this song is on that album.
All right, I think I'm tapping out. What is it?
Because give me one more second.
Okay.
I think I can just get it.
A little more time.
Okay. Innocent Man has Tell Her About It.
That's it. That's the one.
I'm almost positive that's on Innocent Man. Yeah.
Yeah. I was still on
Glass Houses. I was, for the record, if you ever listen to Glass Houses Straight Through Again, which is a great album, and this has nothing to do with what we're talking about right now, there is a song on that album called Sleeping with the Television On that for the life of me, I don't know how it didn't become a Billboard hit of some sort. It is such a good pop rock song.
Listen to it whenever
you get a chance.
That is all of Glass Houses as far as I'm concerned, because the fact that Sometimes a Fantasy wasn't like one of the biggest songs in his career is bizarre to me.
It goes like Sometimes a Fantasy, Something Else, and then Sleeping with the Television On. Unbelievable.
It's an amazing side A to that record. All right.
We should not discredit that Billy Joel picked some of the worst sound effects to start songs of all time. He should not be allowed to do
that. Glass shattered.
The glass shattering. Like Allentown is garbage.
Oh, dude. Oh, yeah. Allentown is my favorite. We're really going down a Joel hole here.
Sorry.
Keep that in mind, Chris. I think Patreon, we need to do a Joel hole.
I stole that. I actually stole that from Vic Berger from the Office Hours. They do a podcast called The Joel Hole, and it's spelled JoelHoel.
I like that a lot, bonus episode, actually.
The Joel Hole. Okay, so it's still 1-0, John. Question five. Ooh, who's going to buzz in first for this one? This song, which just saw a recent resurgence thanks to a big event, took the number one spot for 4 weeks throughout the month of October 1983. Go ahead.
Is it Total Eclipse of the Heart?
You got it.
Let's go.
Yeah. We are recording this 2 days after Totality, baby.
you were probably in a better space for Totality. I didn't notice much.
Yeah, there was a little bit of Totality.
Yeah, I watched it. It was cool. It was pretty cloudy here.
Yeah, same.
All right, John won, but I'll give you guys the last question so Matt can maybe get a point.
Probably won't. Let's do this.
These two music icons teamed up to dominate the number one spot in December of 1983. Go ahead.
I'm going to guess, is it Stevie Wonder and Paul McCartney?
That is incorrect.
Ooh. Damn. Yeah, that's Thriller. Okay, I'm going to say Michael Jackson and Paul McCartney.
You got it.
Yeah, Girl Is Mine.
No, it was Say, 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 actually.
Say, Say, Say? I guess it was promoting a Paul McCartney album and not Thriller. I was just thinking...
That's a good job. Yeah. That was really good.
Yeah.
I lucked into that one though. Cause I was thinking of a totally different song.
You beat Matt. Good job. And, hey, thunder or blunder here on how are we feeling about Dexy's Midnight Runners. We'll start with John. You think they brought the thunder or was this a blunder?
I think with the everything about them brought the thunder. I mean, song is incredible. We know what they did after the fact in the UK. And then also even though we were kind of making fun of it with all the band moving around, like the people, like that's crazy and awesome all at the same time that like, you kind of got to be like, I love all the lore behind them. Yeah. That makes it all a thunder for me. So I'm going thunder.
Yeah. Matt.
I mean, I thought that they were thunder before we even did this episode. I have still to this day, their first three albums on CD. Cause I really like it. It's really good. So thunder for me on this.
I think I'm going to have to agree with you guys. I dove into this band and there was some of that early stuff that really put me in the mind of Matt. You said it earlier, the Specials and Madness, they fit right in there nicely as they went on. I mean, I love that he was trying new things each album. Maybe that was part of the reason why the band was changing each album too. I think this guy, Kevin Rowland, could have been, I think he's pretty legendary. Probably could have been even on a higher tier than he is if he'd been able to keep it together a little more, keep the band together a little more. I watched some recent performances of them on ITV. They still sound great. I think they play the song a key or two lower. That's understandable when you get up there in years, but yeah. it still sounded really good. And yeah, I think this band's pretty much undeniable thunder. I've seen some like blowback to them, I think maybe in our Facebook group or something, about people being like, oh, I hate that song and stuff. But I don't see it.
I don't see it at all. And I think Kevin Rowland is it, if nothing else, he seems like a real musician's musician.
Oh, yeah.
Seems like the music nerds love him. And you know who else we love? John Franklin. You've got a one-man show coming up next week.
I do. Thanks for that transition, Matt. You're a legend for that. I got a one-man show debuting next week in Hoboken, New Jersey. So if you're in the area, New York City or Hoboken, it's at the Mile Square Theater.
Let me correct myself. This is coming out the week of. This is going to be on Wednesday. So go check it out.
So in the recording, we're a few weeks out. But when you hear this, faithful listener, you'll be a couple days away. So go get your tickets. You could go to my Instagram, TikTok, anywhere to get the tickets at my link in bio. Go to the Mile Square Theater website. You could get the tickets there. This is a really cool show. I'm really geeking out on it. We're filming it mostly just for shits and giggles, and hopefully eventually we'll turn into a tour and next special. But it talks all about, the title of it is Reality TV Rules, One Man's Struggle with Lying, totally based on Ferris Bueller because he was my childhood hero. And it talks about my mastering in the art of bullshit and why lying is not as bad as you might think it is, because it leads to some of the greatest truths of your entire life. So if you're a fan of reality TV, you're a fan of comedy, you're a fan of just people trying new stuff, come check out the show. Check me out on Instagram at John Franklin. You can just search me. It's easy. At TikTok, John Franklin Comedy. And yeah, that's it. Come check out the show. I would really appreciate it. We're close to selling out while this episode's being recorded, so I hope we're not sold out when people actually hear it, but we're getting there.
Well, I hope we are sold out.
Yeah, I hope that they missed their chance, and now they just have to wait for the tour.
Yeah.
I'll take either one of it. But yeah, I'm excited about this one. It's not just stand-up. There's a lot of acting involved. There's a lot of character play. It's a cool one, and I'd like to shout out the Edinburgh Fringe for piquing my interest in one-man shows, because I think I would have just stuck with stand-up if I didn't get the chance. But I'm excited about this one. It's going to be cool.
Nice.
Hell yeah. Love it. Thanks for coming back, John. And Kevin Rowland, look in the mail for your certified thunder, because you are now officially thunder, according to our podcast.
This has been One Hit Thunder. One Hit Thunder is hosted by Chris Fafalius of the band Punchline and produced by Matt Kelly of Geekscape.net. Underneath me, you're hearing The Hit off the Punchline album Just Say Yes. Visit punchlinemusic.com for any upcoming news on the band. Our podcast is on Patreon now. Find us at patreon.com/OHTpodcast for early access to episodes, bonus conversations, and a chance to vote on future songs for us to cover. Be sure to rate, review, and subscribe to us on any podcasting app, and tune in next week for more One Hit Thunder.
Listening to the Geekscape Network.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hey, this is Aaron from No Simple Road. I'm inviting you to come hang out with Apple, Mel, and I as we talk with the musicians, artists, chefs, authors, and beyond from the world that turns us on. We're reaching into the improvisational music scene, the psychedelic culture, the festival world, and getting to know what makes the people tick that create those scenes. Come join us on the long, strange trip over at No Simple Road.